Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to Unhappy Hour, the show where we bitch about all the things we love to hate every single week. I'm your host, Matt Bellassai. I'm here in my closet recording far, far away from my producer, Barry Finkel. Hi, Barry.
Hey, Matt. How's your quarantine going this week?
Well, last night, I don't know what happened, but I went to bed at like midnight. I swear I was in bed for like 60 seconds when I heard a car horn that just did not stop. It had to have been, no joke, like 2 straight minutes of just a solid car horn. And at some point I was like, do I have to go check? Like, is someone dead? Because like, there's no logical reason why anybody should lay on their car horn for more than 2 seconds. I've said this before. If you honk for more than 2 seconds, your car should explode. But then I looked outside finally, and I'm pretty sure a limousine got into an accident. So it was like stuck in the middle of a road. And it had to have been carrying like a bachelorette party or something, because then they all got out onto the sidewalk and were wooing every 30 seconds, just a full-blown wooing on the street at midnight. Yeah, it was a Saturday, but I don't give a shit. I was just like, I was seconds away from like getting a sword and going outside. First of all, what the fuck are you having a bachelorette party right now? No. There had to have been like 15 of them. I was like, absolutely not. Get the fuck off my block. I'm not taking this right now. And then I could hear them. I think they all like walked away eventually because they couldn't get back into their limo. And I could hear them wooing from like blocks away. It was so aggravating. I had such a headache. Anyway. So
it sounds like you're amazing. It sounds like you're well rested. You're ready for like a gorgeous recording.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly in the mood for it. I'm certainly in the mood for some complaining. How was your week?
Oh, you know, last night I watched the 1976 film Network. Have you ever seen it?
Mm-mm.
It's a classic. I had never seen it. I just want to point out that there is a scene where a news anchor is yelling to tell everyone to go over to their windows and scream, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Wow.
And then they cut to like cities all over the country where everyone is screaming that outside their window. And I started crying because that's where I'm at. And it was very topical. So,
did you do a primal scream in college? Do you know this?
What?
Like, well, besides just your standard issue primal screaming,
right,
that everybody
like,
does in college.
Every week, but...
It was part of like, whatever that week they call before like finals week, where you have no classes and they have like a whole bunch of stuff to try to like make it less stressful as you prepare for finals. And one night they have a primal scream where everybody at one time is supposed to like scream your face off.
Wow. No, I do not. If we did have it, I don't think that I ever heard of that.
That's what we should be doing.
I'm in full support of the primal scream. We should definitely get that going.
Well, we may not have a primal scream, but we have this podcast. So coming up on today's episode, we got Worst Things First, where I shout about the stupidest, most ridiculous, worst news of the week. After that, we're diving deep into dirty ass dishes. Listen, this topic has come up frequently in the past few months. You're probably familiar with our disdain by now, but there's just so much more to bitch about. This endless cycle of washing dishes. I just had to dedicate a whole deep dive to it. Okay. Then we've got M. Schultz and Christine Schieffer of the podcast And That's Why We Drink as our guest complainers. If you're not familiar with their wildly popular pod, it's all about paranormal, true crime stories, and boxed wine, obviously. We get into all that and more, so let's get into it. Let's do it. Let's grab our sponges and start the show. All right, worst things first. Let's talk about the worst news of the week. First, a small herd of goats is responsible for blocking the presidential motorcade last weekend.
As Fred Don, the goat! Fred the goat!
Yeah, Donald was trying to travel to his golf resort in New Jersey, obviously, because we're in the middle of a pandemic. So where else would the president be but a golf resort? And our good friends, the goats, had the good sense to get in the way. Disruption, protest. Goats, welcome to the resistance. Did we have any doubt that our abolitionist goats that we feature regularly on this podcast would be on the right side of history? I didn't. I knew.
No.
Yeah. Fred started as the Harriet Tubman of goats, and now he's becoming the Malcolm X of goats. He's saying protest, violent protest if necessary. I'm just going to foment insurrection via goat.
We love a political goat.
Love a political goat. I mean, maybe especially because these goats technically work for Donald. According to a White House pool report, there was a brief pause during our drive onto the property to make way for a herd of goats that live on Trump's property. He gets a tax break, a property tax break known as a farmland tax break, worth nearly $80,000 a year on his golf resort because it supposedly doubles as a goat ranch.
What?
According to the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. So I guess there's like a loophole for landowners who, if you say that your like property is technically like an agricultural project, then you get a fucking tax break.
You know what this makes me want to do? Primal scream. Just fucking primal scream.
I mean, listen, I haven't like truly, truly gone off on this pod, but it makes me so mad when people call that man a businessman. He played a businessman on TV. He is not a businessman. That's insane. It's like Meryl Streep was not editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine. Okay? She should be, but she's not. But yeah, apparently the Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster maintains 113 acres of hay farming and eight goats. Eight goats! And you get $80,000 a year?
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's so
ridiculous.
That's
not enough goats. Remember when that person last time bought like five goats? And
for
it was
like $900.
Yeah, it was not that much. So apparently that's all we need. We can go in together on five goats and get a nearly $100,000 tax break.
Let's do it.
I'm down. Next, an old tradition dating back to the Black Plague of the 1600s has reemerged in Florence. Wine windows.
Woo!
Basically, wine glory holes. That servers can pass alcoholic drinks through in a socially distanced manner. I don't know if you've seen
Oh, I've seen it. And this is a best things first kind of situation here.
Yeah. But once you get past the like dystopian nature of it, it is very funny to just see a human hand sticking out of a hole in the wall, just like completely disembodied with a drink in it.
Passing. I mean, it's my ideal human interaction.
I think every restaurant should have this. I want a McFlurry that is being passed to me through a hole in the wall.
Amen.
Okay. Frappuccino. Anything. A hot dog with everything on it. A big old pickle. Yes.
Oh my God. My friends recently sent me a basket of food, including pickles. And it's the first time I've had pickles just in the house in years. I fucking love pickles, man. I love snacking on pickles. Anyway, this is just a new development in my life.
I enjoy a good pickle. I just don't like when they get like too wet.
I'm sorry,
like they
what?
Can get too soggy. I like a crunchier pickle.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of the crunch. No, I mean, these are Zabar's pickles. Like they're top notch. Okay.
Okay. Well, sorry. I have shitty pickles. So yeah, these wine windows haven't been used in centuries, but they've started to reopen in recent weeks due to coronavirus. And according to the Wine Window Association, I didn't make that up.
Surprised you're not the president.
Real organization of people who oversee these wine glory holes. They said that they're now being used for all sorts of things, not just to stick your pee-pee through, but also they're serving wine, cups of coffee, drinks, sandwiches, ice cream,
ooh,
all germ-free. According to them, it's germ-free. I'm gonna go ahead and say it's probably not entirely germ-free. But
yeah,
like,
I mean, you don't know what's happening on the other side of that window.
Yeah. If I worked at one of those windows and everybody is only seeing my hand, guess what? Fully nude. I'm preparing all of your drinks with all of my giblets just out. Also, I would really like to just see a resurgence of that window from The Wizard of Oz where I can just like insult people from a slot in the front door and not let them in to my city.
That's your doorbell.
Yeah. Especially like little girls who think that they're just going to like come in and call the shots with their little dog and their shiny shoes. Get out. Okay. You're not allowed in the city. And finally, I'm just going to read this headline verbatim. Butt naked man caught chasing wild boar that stole his laptop. Let him surf the internet.
The amount of DMs that I got about this story.
Yeah, I mean, the pictures are pretty hard to say no to because, yeah, it is just the perfect looking naked man, by the way. Like, for a story about a naked man, this is exactly who you would picture.
Right.
I feel like this scene was drawn like you would draw a cartoon about this scene. So it was at a lake in Berlin called Tuvalse.
Wow, what language was that?
German, obviously.
Really? Okay.
Or Devil's Lake in English. I guess this lake is known for, or I don't know, maybe this is just all lakes in Germany, but it's known for having people, it's like a maybe clothing optional. I just assume that's every like body of water in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a bunch of like, you know, beach goers there, lake goers. And then a boar, a wild pig, if you haven't pictured it yet, and her two piglets were seen perusing the shore in search of snacks.
Just having a nice little beach day for themselves, you know?
Yeah, what do you think they're for?
Looking for the popsicle lady.
They're doing what everybody else is doing, having a good time. After reportedly consuming a stash of leftover pizza from the backpack of another tourist who was swimming in the lake at the time, the pig posse moved on to a bright yellow bag, which they presumably thought also had food in it. And that was the bag that had the man's laptop. So they started running away with it. And then the naked man started chasing them, according to a person who documented it. Quote, he gave it all in his Adams costume.
Oh, not a birthday suit. His Adams costume. Wow. I love that.
Just getting real biblical with it. This is basically what happened in Genesis. And I would say instead of a snake, it is a wild boar.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of an apple, it's a laptop.
Right. So in this case, is Eve the pig?
No, the snake is the boar.
Okay, but the boar is taking the laptop.
Yeah.
Is he taking it to Eve?
Okay, in this case, the man is Adam, the laptop is the apple, and yeah, Eve is the pig.
Wow. Sorry. Somehow you made that story more sexist.
Listen, I'm just adapting the themes of the Bible, which, sorry to be the one to tell you this, but it hates women. Anyway, according to the person who documented it, the man laughed loudly at the images that she took and authorized her to post them on social media. She said, every one of us adored him, how focused he stayed. And when he came back with his yellow bag in the hand, we all clapped and congratulated him for his success. This happens when you're focused on your goals.
Wow.
This article also said that they are deceptively agile, can run up to 30 miles per hour, and climb walls up to 6 feet high. So
that I did not expect.
I don't like this.
6 feet high? Yeah, no, that's not, that's not good. It also reminds me, remember the javelina in the beginning of the year that was running? That video of the javelina?
I will never forget.
Oh.
I love that pig.
I loved her too.
And that's it for this week's Worst Things First. Next, we're diving deep into our sinks. Deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive. Deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive. All right, so we've done a few different kitchen-related deep dives, especially in the last couple of weeks, but this topic just keeps coming up time and time again. The dishes. I live alone and somehow I still have approximately 700 dirty dishes in my sink at the end of the day. And I'm ready to start going full Greek wedding up in here and just throwing every last plate and bowl against the ground. Opa! That's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to smash all of my shit.
And then your little Roomba can clean it up. I mean, it's a really perfect plan.
It's stuck under the couch right now and I just haven't, I've been too lazy to bend down and get it out. Like, you live here now.
That's one of your saddest quarantine sentences to date.
I'm just so sick of this Roomba. She gets stuck under everything. I'm like, how do you get stuck in the same spot every day? Don't you have a brain? You're supposed to learn how to avoid this exact situation. But no, next day, stuck. So now I'm like teaching her a lesson. Anyway, it's gotten to the point where I'm like, you know, do I have to wash every dish every time I use it? What if I just kind of like reuse just one bowl and I just let it collect all of the flavors of each meal? It just like...
It's called seasoning.
It's like hot dog water. It's just like exponentially enhancing the flavor and the seasoning with every use.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm going to start doing. But for real, I'm so sick of washing dishes and I wanted to do the full deep dive that this chore deserves. So this is why washing dishes is the worst. First, the water is either cold as ice or hot as Satan's taint. There is no in between. One minute, I'm like, this water is not cold enough to kill the germs. And the next minute, I'm like tending to the third degree burns I've sustained from washing my hands in the devil's ejaculate.
Oh, I hate you.
Did you not like that imagery?
I mean, mine is just a one knob thing, but it gets hot super quick and it gets cold super quick. So it is you never just turn it on and leave it there.
Right. Although there's something weird in my apartment and it doesn't get really cold. It gets not hot, but I would say if I turn it all the way to cold, it's still kind of like lukewarm.
That's interesting because you started this by saying it's either cold as ice or hot as Satan's taint. So I don't really
general,
know what to believe anymore.
In general, it's either cold or too hot. Because the problem is you can't, at least when I'm washing dishes, you can't turn it all the way to its hottest setting because that's far too hot.
No.
So you have to find the perfect balance in between. And that is, it's like a complicated algebraic equation where I have to carry the fours and like, no, I'm not about to do this math just to wash a dish. And then it's like, just when you think you've got the temperature right, God forbid I start washing a metal bowl and it feels like I put it, putting my fingers directly against the sun. Also, and don't you dare even tell me to wear gloves while I do the dishes, okay? Do I look like I'm about to guide a baby out of a cow's birth canal? No. I'm not going to suit up like I'm climbing Mount Everest just to wash a bowl that I thoroughly destroyed with chocolate chunk ice cream. And I know gloves are supposed to like make it better for your skin or whatever, but like, what am I supposed to do with them when I'm done? Just hang them up somewhere, like skin that I peeled off of a body? Like I'm some kind of OCD serial killer? Absolutely not!
Literally just put them over the sink thing. Okay, sure.
Then there's just sopping wet, limpy gloves hanging on my sink with gross mold growing on them?
I definitely... in my old apartment where I didn't have a dishwasher, I ended up getting gloves because I have like minor eczema and it just got to the point where I basically...
Yeah, we all have minor eczema.
That's one of those things that I can't tell if my mom like told me because it was true or just to like make me feel better about the fact that I have really dry skin. I don't know. I'll never know.
I will see.
Because like, is that a thing that doctors diagnose? Do they diagnose eczema as quote unquote minor?
I guess, yeah. If you had severe eczema, you would know.
Right. But anyway, the point is I had gloves for a bit, but now I'm just, you know, that dishwasher life.
Oh, and okay, we've covered this before. I have a dishwasher that I only kind of know how to use. I use it a lot. I still haven't gotten behind the whole thing where you like gradually put stuff in the dishwasher over time and then turn it on. Either I let everything pile up and put it in all at once, or I individually wash everything. Next! It's also so hard to figure out how strong the flow of water should be. Because one second, it's like an old man with a bad prostate trickling out. But then the next second, you turn it up even a little bit, and then bam! It's Splash Mountain. Just my kitchen is an aquarium, and everything I've ever held dear in my life is sopping wet.
Especially because, like, at one point you're just washing a dish, it's flat, the water's flowing off, it's going right into the sink. But the second you introduce a spoon, a ladle of any kind into the equation, like, you don't know where that water's going.
Yeah.
It's going
everywhere.
That's
really why I had this thought the other day, which is proof that, I don't know, I need other things to do in my life right now. But I was like, I really want one of those, like, restaurant kitchen faucets. It's basically just like a springy hose that dangles from the ceiling.
Yes.
That would make my life so much easier and be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be great for the dishes. It'd be great for the dog, for me, washing potty.
Yeah.
Would love
that's
that.
The other thing I feel like they have that at like the vet or like dog groomers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, because I'm so tall, the wetness.
Okay, brag.
That I know. I am 6'3". I try to only bring it up like once a month, but this is when I'm doing it, I guess. But I saw some like meme on Twitter of someone being like, every time I wash dishes, and it was a picture of someone with a wet spot on like their stomach, and I was like, I don't get this. And then I realized it's because I'm so tall that it's not my stomach that gets wet; it's my wiener.
Yeah, it's definitely the crotchal area.
Every time.
For me as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I just know I'm walking away from washing dishes every time with a soggy pee-pee. That is how it works. Next! How the heck am I supposed to clean off burnt on stuff? It's impossible. I attempted to make jam a few weeks ago and I burnt it, obviously. And it took me, no exaggeration, 4 full days to get it all the way off.
Were you using steel wool?
Yeah, I went through an entire box of steel wool pads. It was just that like caked on and I could not get it. I soaked it. Yeah, I like prayed. And for what? I could have just bought a new pan and it would have been easier and probably cheaper.
You know what I fucking hate? Steel wool pads. Like, they, like, hurt.
They hurt, and every steel wool pad I've ever used, like, disintegrates in my hand.
Right?
Which doesn't make any sense.
How long am I supposed to use? Also, it's like, you need to use this in order to get shit off of your pans, but also, if you use it on the wrong pan, you completely fuck your pan for life, right? Like
I guess.
It's too risky.
Yeah, I had to look up how to clean cast iron today because I think I ruined one of my cast iron pans.
Did you use soap?
You can use soap. You're not supposed to use a lot of it.
No, you're not supposed to use it.
The mistake I made was that I left it in the sink with water on it. And so it,
it got
kind of rusty.
Oh.
So I looked it up and you're supposed to use a steel wool to get the rust off and then like start the process over. I don't give a shit.
Mm.
It's not like I'm like prizing my cast iron skillet for how long I've seasoned it for.
Okay, well then, I mean, that's like the whole point of a cast iron skillet, but I'm sure.
Next! Every dish is just a reminder of what something I should have done earlier, but didn't. Like, sure, I could have rinsed out this bowl before leaving it in the sink for 3 days. And now I got to scrub it like I'm exercising a demon, but I didn't. And here we are. And now I got to break a sweat just so I can pour a bowl of Fruit Loops at 3 a.m.
I love my boyfriend so much, but truly one of the things that gets on my nerves the most is that he will soak any dish before putting it in the dishwasher or before washing it. And it's like some dishes just don't need to be soaked. If it's a cereal dish that you like rinsed out, it does not need to soak. If it's just like a plate that you had a sandwich on, guess what? You don't need to soak it. And he soaks absolutely every dish.
Yeah, I mean, that is weird. And unnecessary. Sorry.
It's just, it's procrastinating under the guise of productivity.
Sure. I mean, I understand that. Also, I have no idea how often I should be changing my sponge. I do use a sponge, not a rag, because I'm classy. Same. Like that. But I just don't know. I honestly don't know how SpongeBob stayed looking so fresh all the time. He really made it look easy. And it's not. It's absolutely not. Every time I use a sponge for even 1 second, it becomes the most disgusting square that I've ever seen in my life. And I am disgusted by it, and I don't want it in my house, and it is banned.
Do you wring it out fully?
Sometimes.
Not after every time that you wash the dishes, that you finish washing
the
dishes?
Maybe it depends on my mood.
Oh my God.
Sometimes I don't feel like squeezing it out.
My mom puts her sponges in the dishwasher, which... I think she's the only person I know who does that. And I started doing it too, but I don't actually know if it like elongates their life.
I don't know. It's like I don't care about my sponges that much to wash them individually. Also, yeah, I have one of those like tiny little suction cup baskets that go against the side of my sink that I just hang it in so it dries out. Cause like, mm-hmm. I don't know, some people you just like leave the sponge at the bottom of the sink and it's like, okay.
No, disgusting.
Yeah, I guess you don't care about anything. Welcome to the dump that you live in. You live in a cesspool of your own making.
There are a few smells that I hate more that just absolutely disgust me than a dirty old sponge.
Yeah, no, I'd rather die. And finally, the problem is you start washing dishes and then you basically have to clean your entire kitchen, which like I didn't sign up for that when I started washing this one dish, because then you got to clean the sink. When you're done, you got to scrub the bottom of the sink with your sponge, even though that feels weird. It's like, oh, I'm cleaning the bottom of the sink with the sponge that I use to clean the dishes, even though theoretically it should be the same thing. The problem is you wash your dishes and then it's like, ugh, now I got to clean the bottom of the sink and the faucet and I might as well do the countertops while I'm at it. And then before you know it, it's 4 a.m. You're standing in your underwear smelling like bleach, just crazed eyes shaking because you decided it's time to fucking deep clean everything. That is my life. And that is why I hate doing the dishes. So that's it for this week's deep dive. Next, we got Em and Christine on the pod right after this commercial break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
My guest complainers today are the hosts of the podcast, And That's Why We Drink. Each week, M. Schultz drinks milkshakes and tells a paranormal story, and Christine Schieffer drinks alcohol and tells a true crime story. The perfect podcast, really, besides mine. But, you know, I'll share the spotlight. Welcome, Em and Christina.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're so amped to be here. I've also been listening to your prime podcast. We can share number one, I guess. And I'm very excited okay, to be here. So thank you.
No, I'm so excited. So we like to get started by asking, what is one thing you hate that everybody else loves?
And why don't you take it away first?
Okay. I have two, and they're both things that I know Christine loves. So I at least know that one set of confirmation on my end.
We're getting personal right away.
I think you'll agree too, because I am the outlier at most parties when I say this, but I don't like board games. I hate board games.
Okay.
And I hate cheese.
See, you're a sicko. It's true.
I know.
You're a sicko.
Okay, we have to dive into both of these.
That's fine. That's okay.
Let's start with board games.
Yeah, that seems like that's less damaging to my reputation.
I'll step in and say Em just hates games, I'm pretty sure. Like, Em doesn't like to play games.
I specifically board games, though, because you're not wrong. But I have not one competitive bone in my body. Uh-huh. And I was an only child, so I don't understand like sibling rivalries and like having to be the best. I'm like, that sounds toxic. And when it comes to board games, anytime I play board games with someone, it's often people who are like, I'm gonna kick your ass. And it's like, okay, well, you could also just, we could just not play and you can just tell everyone that happened. I don't care.
Right.
So I'm like the most boring person to play a game with anyway. So no one enjoys it. It ends up being an awful time. So that's my really bad explanation.
I do come from a very competitive board game family. And I do think that informs a person's attitude
yes.
towards games. It's like how violent people got over like taboo.
The neighbors across the street, growing up across the street, they're a family of six and they're the most competitive people I've ever met.
Uh-huh.
And I would hear them in my house screaming because their games got so intense. It's like, why would I want to walk into that home and play with you? It sounds so not fun. So I guess more nurture versus nature that I grew up listening to people scream over board games.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that. My family, we used to go every year to Michigan on vacation, the very Midwestern. It's like, you know, you go where the water is anyway. There was one year where someone called out my grandmother for like using one of the taboo words,
uh-oh.
Which is, of course, taboo in the game Taboo. And she got so mad, she got up, said, we're leaving, and like left vacation.
Left vacation. Oh, no.
And then drove back to Chicago where we. Yeah. So over taboo.
Okay, but here's the thing. I also love drama. So your grandma sounds like someone I would have wanted to be in. I would have been like, I'm getting in the car.
Something felt off about this. And then I was like, right, but Em would walk into a house full of fighting people because Em loves to watch that happen.
I just like to be the fly on the wall. I love drama. And I just want to like kind of sit at the counter and observe it, you know?
So everybody else, yeah, we could start the board game once the fight breaks out. And
I'll come downstairs. Come yeah. And I'll bring the popcorn. I'll be like, tell me who do we hate right now? What's going on? Yeah.
Right. Okay, and then cheese? This is the more controversial.
This is troubling to me, yeah. And it's not like it's because you're, you know, it's like troubles your tummy. It's like you literally just don't like the taste of it, right?
I don't. And that's why I came in hot with the board games. I was hoping we could avoid it. But
oh, no. I was not going to just brush past that.
So cheese, yeah. I like it if it's necessary to a dish, like pizza. Like, but other than that, like as like a, it's its own item, it just tastes like I'm eating a sponge, or like it doesn't taste good at all.
I'm worried about the cheese that you've been eating.
I know, me too.
Me too. Like maybe I'm eating the wrong cheese, but anytime I've seen people just like, you know, if there's like a wine and cheese night, I don't drink. So I'm like, I guess I'm going to go after the cheese. And then every time I eat it, I'm like,
right.
It doesn't taste like anything, or it tastes like how it smells to me, which neither is enjoyable.
I have had so many board game, wine, and cheese nights, and I can imagine you just turning right around and walking out the door like you would
what
hate
a
that.
Nightmare. Yeah.
What a nightmare.
I would. I'd just text you and be like, let me know how it goes. But also, Christina and I have completely opposite taste palettes. And so the second that we discovered that about each other, I didn't even dare discuss cheese for a while. I was like, I know she loves that shit.
It's true, because I think Em and I have such opposite tastes. And I did grow up in the Midwest, but my parents are German. And like, so we ate the weirdest shit. Like, I was always that kid at lunch who like everyone kind of was eyeing, and like everyone else got like Dunkaroos and I got like ostrich kielbasa or something. And so... You know, that's a real example, by the way.
What a palate.
I believe it.
So I think I just like have always eaten weird shit. So I don't blame Em most of the time, because we definitely have very opposite tastes. But cheese, that one I can't quite get over.
Okay. Christine, do you have things that you hate that everybody else loves?
This might be more of like a preference, but I know a lot of people hate talking on the phone. So that's not like a unique thing. But like when my phone rings, I have like an immediate like physical reaction, even if it's just like my mom or M or somebody. I hate the phone so much. And I think I've like kind of, so I've, as we all have, spent a lot of time with my own thoughts during quarantine, like significantly too many. And I think part of the problem is that I rely very heavily on like reading people and their body language. And I think like, and I grew up speaking German. I didn't speak English till I was like 6 or 7. And so I think I have this weird built-in fear that like, I'm not going to have a normal I don't know. I have a lot of anxiety, but talking on the phone, man.
Like if you can't if you can't see their expression,
yeah,
then you can't gauge where this is going.
what is your stance on like a video call then? Or do you feel better about it? Or is it, do you...
I can't decide if I hate video calls or phone calls more. And I've obviously been thrown directly into the fire with quarantine. So like now I'm like, it's fine. But there's just something about like my anxiety's peaked when I'm not like face to face with somebody, even when it's like already an awkward conversation. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have problems.
Also, I'm a real asshole of a friend then, because I call Christine at least twice.
Yeah. I mean... And Em was like, well, I'm helping you overcome with like immersion therapy. And I was like, okay, well, I guess we'll see if it works.
Which like was just my excuse of like, I need to call you. And also now you don't even live in LA. So it's like, I'm sorry, but I got to call you.
Listen, I never understood why people need to call over text. I never got it. I never understood it. But you know what?
I'm so with you on that. I'm like, no. Especially an unsolicited phone call.
Thank you.
It's just like, I mind it less if it's scheduled.
Right.
If you're like, I'm going to call you at this time, then I have time to like kind of like think about it and prepare. Yeah. I feel like I'm just unloading my like person. My favorite thing in an interview is just to talk about my personal life as much as possible with people.
That's what a podcast is for. Know,
really just
I just said I love
know.
Drama. I love drama. Tell me all your woes. I gotta know.
No, I've started to get comfortable like swiping on the apps a little bit more. And because I could imagine like, okay, I can go meet someone at the park. We can have like a socially distanced meetup or something. And there was someone I was talking to and we swapped numbers. And that night that we exchanged, we'd been chatting for like a day. He FaceTimed me out of nowhere. And
okay,
I was like... Absolutely not.
I just got literal chills. Like that's how scary that was.
Did you answer? You didn't answer, right?
No. I was like, absolutely not. I replied and I was like, there is no way I'm FaceTiming. And then he followed up like twice more. And I basically got like pressured into answering a FaceTime call. And I and that was clear. He was like absolutely like quarantine drunk.
OK,
and,
that gives a little bit of leeway. I guess.
That somehow makes him better in my mind.
I guess it makes more sense. But I will say I just changed my mind. I think a video or FaceTime is often worse because you can't just be on, like, you can be on the phone and just like on the computer doing stuff.
Right.
With a FaceTime, like, you have to engage the whole time. And I'm like, what if I need to be doing like laundry, or I need to be like ignoring you and being on Pinterest right now?
It's like, I can't lie and tell you I'm busy. You know I'm in bed. Like,
you see the background. That's a good point. So
I think there's, to both of your points, I think there's a hierarchy of like when you have cross the threshold into being allowed to FaceTime someone
out of the blue, like, especially
like you have to have earned your stripes in the friendship of like, unless we're meeting up and I'm about to park and I need to tell you where I am, then that's like, if there's an emergency kind of phone call, I get it. But other than that, like, we don't talk outside of text until a certain level, and then we don't FaceTime until a certain level. And then and then we're close.
I'm like, hard agree. There is a hierarchy. You have to like make it onto the list of people, yes, that I will allow to call or FaceTime out of the blue.
Amen.
Uh-huh.
Amen.
Okay, left turn. We've got our complaining on. So tell me about the origins of your podcast for people who have not heard it. Yeah, I'm sure you've told the origin story 1,000 times, but...
Well, we do love to complain, so that does actually make up quite a good element of the show.
Good.
We don't usually start with that, but I think here it's pretty fitting to say that it's actually a huge component of what we do. But yeah, it's a true crime paranormal show. Every week M tells a paranormal story and I tell a true crime story. We don't tell each other in advance. So, and we usually don't know about at all anything about the other person's topic. So it's really fun to kind of like surprise each other. And we actually became friends like shortly before starting the podcast. So over the last couple of years, we've kind of gotten to know each other while doing the podcast, while other people kind of joined in on, like, I learned M, for example, went to clown college while we were recording. And so everyone else got to learn that with me. So it's kind of a weird journey we've been on and have dragged our listeners through.
Uh-huh. Everyone's forced to watch us become friends in some way. So
what is the friend origin story?
We first met each other in Boston when we were in grad school and we were studying television production. And Christine and I, when we were at school in Boston, we didn't run in the same circles. I knew of Christine and I'd gone to like a Super Bowl party at her apartment, but we literally lived across the street from each other and just never spoke. And when we moved out here after graduation, all of our friends moved home. And I knew, oh yeah, that girl Christine from BU is still out here.
That weirdo.
And I'm by myself. And I was like, I guess out of necessity, we're both pretty lonely and probably need to just like stick it together. So I planned on going to this Harvest Festival just because I was trying to see what was going on. And I invited Christine. And it was,
and I had a flannel that I hadn't worn yet. And I was like, well, I guess I might as well say yes to this social engagement.
Uh-huh. And so we both went to this Harvest Festival, did not know each other. It was a lot of awkward small talk,
so
but
awkward.
It was, and then we did this, like we did a corn maze and all that. And we went to, there was a tractor ride. And on that tractor ride was the beginning of the friendship where we were stuck on this like little vehicle for a half an hour and had to talk to each other. And so somehow we got on the topic of talking about ghosts and true crime. And that was kind of the first thing we really had in common and spoke about easily with each other. And at some point, Christine said, oh, do you listen to podcasts? And I said, what's a podcast? And so she introduced me to a few that she liked. And I would say by the end of that tractor ride, I knew that we were going to be really good friends. And we started hanging out very often after that and always talking about ghosts and true crime because that was kind of our first mutual love. And not even a couple months later, I was like, let's just start our own podcast and see where
it goes.
It's
true, because that was in like October, November, and then we started the podcast like our first episode
in January.
Yeah, so it was like a very quick turnaround. And I remember M being like, hey, maybe we should start a podcast. And we were staying up till like 4 a.m. just talking about ghosts and whatever. And M texted me like, hey, do you want to start a podcast? And we still have the screenshot. And I was like, I didn't respond for 7 hours. And then I was like, I have so much phonings. I don't even know. This is just a prime example where I was like, I don't know what to do about this. And my husband, who's my boyfriend at the time, we were living together, and he was like, you need to do something. Because I was just like broke, unemployed, like lounging around depressed. And he was like, maybe you should just do like have a hobby. And so finally I was like, okay. So thank God I finally was like, all right, Em, we can try it. And thank God we did, because, you know, here we are now.
Yeah.
I do love that, because one of my questions was going to be, like, when you kind of learn that the other person was kind of like as much of a freak as as you are.
But it sounds tractor. Like
literally, yeah, the first conversation.
The tractor.
And by the way, I mean, I say the word freak with as much love as possible.
It's a compliment.
Yes.
Thank you.
with like a pH or something. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, exactly. I do think, yeah, there is something about like the true crime and like paranormal like genres that it's like it is so successful because people are like deep down, whether they like to admit it or not, like love freaky shit.
Freaks like us. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Very true.
We were fortunate. We stepped in kind of right when that true crime thing was like picking up, and so we got in at that moment, and I feel like we're really good timing on that part. And there's so many now, which is great, because I literally listen to like every single one. So yeah, it's become like a huge thing in the US.
Do you have a one story that kind of like stands out in each genre? You both nodded immediately.
M stories have gotten some like infamy, actually.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say their names because they are allegedly very
powerful.
Cursed. But
that's fine by me. Joe, I don't want my podcast to be cursed in any way.
We would never do that to you.
There are a few dolls that are very haunted. One of them is actually now owned by Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and it's at his museum in Vegas. Uh-huh. But the other one, who's arguably much more dangerous, either of the dolls, if you look in their eyes, even if it's just online, you Google a picture of them, or if you say their name, people swear that they, you know, have back pain the next day, or they have seizures or end up in the hospital.
There are a lot of people who get nosebleeds. Like, we talk about this doll and people will just like get nosebleeds while we're talking about it. It's horrible.
So
it's horrible.
We've had a lot of people email us saying that when they were listening to us on their way to like work or whatever, they got in car wrecks, or like they've even like their audio wouldn't work when they were listening to the podcast. And even our own editors have said that like the audio, anytime we mention those dolls in their names, by the way, if we mention them on the show, the audio is really screwy.
One Em mentioned, like casually talked about one of them in the midst of another story, and the guy who was helping us edit said later that he went and he couldn't find the files, and he went in Google Drive and it had him, it said at like 1:03 p.m. like he deleted these files, and he was like, I was not even at the computer, I was helping another show edit, record.
I don't like any of
I know this. And then he's like took a screenshot, he's like, it says I did this, but I was like in a different room. So I don't know, creepy shit happens with these dolls.
Yeah, they're the only episodes that I've had to do content warnings for, because it's like, I if you're too freaked out, I'm gonna say their names, and if you're driving, maybe stop. So
right, is there a fave true crime story?
I like am partial to the ones that are kind of unsolved, which is like also frustrating, you know, they're the frustrating ones because you're like, well, I just want an answer. But they're also, I think, the most compelling because you can like talk about theories and, you know, discuss like what maybe happened, or even see if you can come up with your own theory. And like, especially Netflix recently released the new Unsolved Mysteries series, which I highly recommend. And it's just so creepy to watch some of these stories. Like Elisa Lam, I think, is one of my favorites. It was an early episode, and there's like video footage of her on an elevator acting super weird and hitting like certain buttons. And then she was found in the water tank on the roof of the hotel.
Right, right.
And so just like stuff like that where it's just really unsettling and like you just don't have the answers. I think those are probably my favorites. But I love them all.
I started watching Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix, and I was like, I can only do parts of it at a time, and only because, yeah, I'm like, I'm too weak for this.
Yeah,
I was never like, I never really loved like horror movies either.
Oh, I hate horror movies. That's the thing. Like, I hate anything like gory, or like, I'm not a fan of horror movies, but like, for whatever reason, true crime is very comforting to me, which I know is so twisted. But it's what works. I don't know.
We're closing. I do want to complain more. I can't
always. <decide. laughs>
Oh my God. Without question.
You've met the right people.
Because we did ask you both ahead of time for a few topics to complain about, so we could go through some of them. Christine, one of yours was jerks on social media.
I don't know what it is about this quarantine, and I think everyone's spending too much time with their thoughts, but man, people have been getting mean, and I don't know. I think like maybe it's the, you know, we like to blame astrology sometimes, but I've just noticed at least in the past couple of weeks, I've gotten a lot more like kind of angry messages, and maybe that's just because of the state of the world, which I don't blame people, obviously, but I don't know. People seem to be a little more vicious than usual.
I guess it's the concept of like, oh, you're really brave, like behind the screen, like right. When you're not looking at someone. And now people have only had their screens.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
So right.
People are getting real courageous.
Right. There are no real world consequences to anything because right. There is no real world anymore.
Exactly.
Bingo.
That's
Wait,
it.
Wait, someone put that on a shirt. Hang on. Wait.
That's it. Yeah, so I had a couple weeks there where I was just like, wow, people are getting me down. And I've had to really limit my like Twitter time. And I mean, we're lucky. We don't have most of our listeners are just like wonderful and not hateful by any means. But there have been a couple who've slid in there and been like kind of, I don't know, too far. We just realized like TikTok is like the only place where you can just keep scrolling and like positive things will happen, which is so weird because like it took me forever to even figure out what TikTok was. But like if you keep scrolling on Twitter, you're like, it's just getting worse and worse and worse and nothing right. good is going to come out of it. But if you're on TikTok, you're like, oh, now I learned a new way to fold my laundry, or hey, I learned a fun dance. I don't know. I feel like there's positivity there, at least for now.
Yeah. I haven't figured it out. So,
You're missing out. TikTok is a dream.
But also, it will suck hours of your life away. So, maybe be careful.
If you're feeling like, oh, this is going to be a productive time for me, just don't get TikTok. Your life is gone like that. It's just gone.
No, I don't need any more time sucks at this point. I've abandoned the like time limit function on my iPhone. Like there was just like every day it would say like your time is up and I would click ignore. And I was like, why am I bothering anyway?
It's like, watch me.
Yeah. One of yours was trying to get on a better sleep schedule.
Which is not working.
That's just so, like, you hate the concept of just like trying to improve sleep.
Oh, I hate the concept. So I've always had sleep problems. And then with quarantine, it's like, oh, well, there's literally no reason to be awake sometimes. And that sounds wildly depressing. But like, but it's like true where it's like, oh, if I'm in a comfy position, it's like, I might as well just close my eyes. And like, what's going to happen if I don't do that? And so it's... My sleep schedule has been completely messed up where like more than usual. So now I'm going to bed at like 4 or 5 in the morning and that's not good. And I've even tried like, oh, I'll go to sleep, you know, at a normal time and then I'll wake up at a normal time. But then I do that thing where I oversleep and I just wake up at the exact same time and then I'm totally out of whack. So I don't really have a bedtime anymore. It's just whenever my body kind of collapses and then and then I wake up and I'm productive for a little bit and then I just kind of fall, like kind of just faint away again. So I don't even have a time schedule, which I guess is the big complaint here. I don't know how to sleep anymore.
I totally am with you. I don't know any adult who has like a bedtime. It's at least not a functioning one.
Yeah. I used to have like an actual routine when I had a day job. And then even before quarantine, I had a pretty good system of waking up at like a normal-ish time. Mm-hmm. I still slept in late compared to my day job, but I still woke up at the same time, went to bed at the same time. And then with quarantine, I've just decided like throwing caution to the wind. And I'm like, I'm just going to stay up and see what happens if I don't go to sleep. And then all of a sudden I'm like, shocker, exhausted the next day. I guess Christine and I both have this quality where if we have this like spurt of creativity, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well now I can't go to sleep until that thing is actually created and in my hands in a real solid product. And so I'll have these ideas only when I'm already delirious from not sleeping. So at like 2 a.m., I'm like, this is a genius idea. And it's probably not. But then by noon the next day, it's done. And I'm like, and it's like the most wild thing in the world. And I'll show it to Christine. And then I'm like, I'm going to go to bed now. So like just in my sleep is totally out
like
of whack.
But that's how the genius is made, because M built it, like, for example, an entire escape room in their apartment. Like a real life, like, better than anyone that I've done at an actual place. And, like, so I went over there and it was, like, a surprise. And we did this, like, full escape room. And I mean, like, locks and glow-in-the-dark things on the ceiling. And it was, and M was, like, basically eye twitching, like, yeah, I just made this in the last 48 hours. And I was like, oh my God, like the chaos.
I appreciate you finding a positive spin to like what some therapists would consider immediate necessary help.
Listen, this podcast was built on insomnia, so it's okay.
I do love, I was not expecting the like productive thing that you do when you have that idea and you can't go to sleep to be an escape room as birthday present.
I will say it's always worth it. Like the ideas that do come out of my head, they're things that nobody would think about because you have to be slap happy for it to even show up.
Right.
But then when it comes out, I'm like, oh, wow, that actually was like a pretty solid choice.
Well, before I let both of you go, I want to ask, where can people find you and your work?
Sure. You can check us out. Everything's pretty much at andthatswhywedrink.com. On mm-hmm. social media, we're at ATWWD Podcast. We're doing a virtual live show since our live tour was canceled on the 22nd of August. So that info is online as well. And you can follow me at Xtine Schieffer and M at the M Schultz. And
yes,
that's pretty much it. Or you can listen to us wherever, you know, you listen to your pods.
Yeah. I mean, there was so much background. We didn't even get to clown colleges.
I know.
But everybody could go and listen to your pod and hopefully
you'll find out plenty.
Yeah. All of the blanks will be filled in. Well, thank you both so much. I had so much fun. And yeah, keep staying alive.
keep not answering your phone is what I
say. Keep on keeping on.
Keep on keeping on. Thank exactly. you so much for having us. This was a blast.
Thank you so much.
Oh, all right, we're almost there. We're almost at the end of the show. But first, our chasers. Chasers are the good stuff that helps all the bad shit go down easier. Starting with do better, white people. Barry, what are we highlighting this week?
This week, I am highlighting a comedy show.
Oh.
It is Ziwei Fumido's Instagram Live comedy show. I highly recommend it. It's an iteration of her old videos, Baited with Ziwei, where she just basically invites people on and baits them with race questions. It's every Thursday. The guests range from Caroline Calloway, Alyssa Milano, Allison Roman, Jeremy O'Harris, also other comedians like Patty Harrison and Yasser Lesser. And it's funny. It's extremely uncomfortable. It's also educational. And I don't know. I just felt like if you don't know about it, It is something that you should be aware of. So it's on Ziwei's Instagram. We'll put a link in it. And Ziwei, obviously, famously, was also a guest complainer on this podcast. But we'll put her Instagram handle in the show notes. And it's just, you know, I feel like just watch it and then you'll understand why I put it on this. It's funny. It's also legitimately educational at times. It's also extremely cringeworthy. But I don't know. I feel like it's she doesn't only interview canceled white people, but there are quite a few of them who have done the show.
Right.
And it's kind of like a lesson in performative whiteness in a really interesting way. But I don't know. You've seen some of it, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. Ziwei. I feel like she was one of our very first guests on Unhappy Hour.
Yeah, she was definitely on here very early on.
But yeah, I remember watching them because she used to do them on YouTube and they were like just like making her friends uncomfortable with like purposefully provocative questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel like it's gotten a little more real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I certainly recommend it. I also am afraid of it.
Yep. I don't understand why people go on it, no. But I'm glad that they do. And it's asking questions like, how many close black friends do you have? And then a lot of the typically white people are like, well, how do you define close? And like, it just, I don't know. People are so uncomfortable talking about race, and to just actually see people talk about it so uncomfortably is some parts cathartic, some parts upsetting, very funny. And I don't know, like, it is an act of anti-racism on Ziwei's part, I feel, to like be doing this show. and just to kind of probe in a very interesting and funny way. So that's what I'm highlighting this week.
I love it. Now let's get into some of the TV we're watching this week. What have you been watching on the TV?
Oh, well, on the old tube, I finished Rami season 2 and I finished Search Party. I had watched like 2 episodes and then I watched all of the rest of it. It's a very good binging show. And it's probably my favorite season so far. But I finished both of those things that I really enjoyed. And now I don't know what to watch next. So what are you watching? What should I watch?
Well, I don't know. Did you ever watch Great British Bake Off? Like,
no,
all of it?
I don't watch a ton of reality.
Okay,
and, like,
well, fuck off.
I'm sorry. I would at least watch an episode.
Well, okay, that doesn't count. But I've been watching, I probably have said this before, like a long time ago, but I've been obviously in a very baking mood lately. Obviously, I've been baking a whole bunch a lot lately, and I've seen all of the Great British Bake Off probably 3 or 4 times. But there's also on Netflix a show called Great British Bake Off Masterclass, which is Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood, the original judges of Great British Bake Off, going through the recipes and making them themselves. Yeah. It's just a fun show. I feel like now I'm watching it from the lens of having baked a whole bunch this past year. And it's like, I feel like I'm now, instead of just enjoying watching these old British people bake stuff, I'm actually like learning. So it's educational. And I'm about to whip up some even more complicated recipes. But yeah, it is so soothing just watching British people bake stuff. So highly, highly recommend.
Nice.
What is your non-TV chaser?
My non-TV chaser is a little bit of a cop-out because I've talked about cocktails before. But we are a part of a CSA. And sometimes with a CSA, you get fruit or vegetables that you don't know what to do with. And last week we got red currants, which are a berry that like typically you don't eat fresh. Like, it's usually you're baking with it dried, or they're kind of, you know, more like a raisin than a fresh fruit.
I don't know what a currant is.
Exactly.
I've never seen a currant.
I don't either. It's a type of berry. They're very, very tart. And so we didn't know what to do with it. And we were going to make margaritas. And then Alex was like, well, what if we make the red currant into a simple syrup? And we looked up a recipe and that's what we did. And it was so good. And we added it to the margarita and it's like, it made it like sweet and tart at the same time. And now I'm obsessed with red currant syrup. So that is my chaser this week, is the margarita that we made.
Mm.
Also, I'm going to be on vacation next week. We're driving to Michigan and Chicago tomorrow. So I'm very excited to actually see my family for the first time. I normally fly to Chicago almost once a month. Like, I'm very close with my family and also like to be with them like a lot. And I haven't seen my brother and sister-in-law and nephew in 7 months, which is the longest I've ever gone without seeing them. And I haven't seen my parents or my sister who's pregnant or my brother-in-law in like 5 months, which is also the longest I've gone without seeing them in my whole life. So I'm really, really excited to drive to the Midwest and be reunited with my family.
Nice.
What about you? What's your chaser?
Mine, well, they're both boring. They're not as exciting as yours. One,
as red currant syrup?
I was just going to say, like, berries in general.
Oh my God.
Did I say this before?
I don't think so.
No, probably not, because I would have remembered that reaction. I just like, it's berry season. I feel like I already put blueberries in like everything. Yeah, I love for like a snack. I'm one of those people now. I feel like I maybe said this because I've been like getting, if sometimes I'll get high and then like stand in front of the fridge and just eat strawberries just right from the fridge. And they're so good. Like a good
strawberry
right
so
from
much.
The fridge. Mm. My other thing was going to be also boring and an elderly of me, but the New York Times crossword puzzle. I mean, I've been doing the crossword for a while. I'm currently on Because they have a new one that comes out every day. But if you are a subscriber and you can go through the archives. But I'm currently, I think, on a 40-day streak of doing the crossword with no hints. Mm-hmm. So if you complete it with no hints, it like counts it towards your streak. I did cheat like a couple of days where I had to like, I never outright Google the answer, but I will like check my work.
Uh-huh.
So it is kind of cheating.
Okay.
But I'm just so, I feel like I'm genuinely getting like better at it. And it's I feel like a good thing that I can use my brain on. It's not like I'm mindlessly scrolling through something. I'm like looking at my phone, but doing a like thing that requires some brain work, which I like. Anyway, it's just like, it brings me joy. So I don't have to justify it. Fuck you.
Yeah, no. I've never finished one, and I've tried doing one like once, and it just made me feel like the biggest idiot in the world. So I truly believe that people who do those crossword puzzles are really intelligent, and I'm glad it brings you joy.
Yeah, well, I am very intelligent. So... And that's it for this week's episode. Thank you for listening to Unhappy Hour. You can head to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get podcasts. Hit that subscribe button, then rate us and review us. But only if it's nice. I don't want to hear your shit. Unhappy Hour is a production of Pineapple Street Studios. It's produced by Barry Finkel, Melissa Slaughter, and me, Matt Belisai. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman and Max Linsky. Our music is by Hansdale Sue. You can bother Barry at Finkelberry Pie. You can worship me at Matt Belisai. And you can follow Unhappy Hour Pod on Twitter for all the latest podcast buzz. And you can leave us a voicemail on our rant hotline. Tell us your own rant that we might feature on the show at 601-600-RANT. That's 601-600-7268. And that's it. That's everything. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Hmm.